It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Hudson Valley Focus Live, 7:06 on The Beacon on this Tuesday morning. Harold King, the president, and Johnny Ann Hansen, CEO.
Yeah, official.
And I saw that nice press release on Emma Olivet with her promotion.
Yes, also her. It's exciting times.
Very good indeed. So we have to get right to business, Harold.
Okay.
I heard you talking about sports.
Okay.
robot umpires to make the All-Star Game debut tonight. Your thoughts?
I have. I'm curious about Robbie's thoughts, but I have. I have mixed feelings.
Mixed three of us.
If they're right, if they're good, we just went through Wimbledon. I don't know if anybody was paying attention to the Wimbledon Championships of Tennis, where they did replace the line judges with.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, no. So there were no line judges at Wimbledon. It was all automated, and there were a number of incidents, yeah, as there are with people.
Sure.
But it was a little bit different, a little bit chaotic. But for the most part, worked well. As far as for the robot umpires, I think they'll be more consistent. Let's put it that way. whether they're right or not is something else.
I think it's more of an institution kind of thing. It's like, yeah, this is like I was telling Tom, like baseball is the most traditional sport out there, mm, and so to make such a radical, turn to robots for the umpires is a little...
Clearly, they're giving it a shot here with the All-Star Game. They're going to see how people react, see how it works. I think they did a little bit in spring training. I think there were a few trial runs.
And Jenny, I don't want to leave you out. Yeah, your thoughts on this?
Go for it. Let's go.
Come on.
Bring on the robots. I'm in.
Listen, depending
what are you guys waiting for? Why were there still people doing this?
Depending on what you are which broadcast you watch, they all have their K zones or their strike zones, and they can see whether the pitch was a strike or not in the replay. And umpires are pretty good, but they make mistakes, and if it can get consistent, I think that's better. But at the same time, there are some judgments and some things that are still require some human interaction. So I'm not a purist. I'm not a baseball purist. However, I don't like the designated hitter. I think it's ready for a try. And I think if it can make the game better, I think if it's consistent, it'll make the game better.
I have a question.
Yes, sure.
My question is, if there are robot umpires, who are you going to yell at? Are you still going to yell? Are you yelling at the robot?
Well,
you're
going to yell at the person that does the interpretation
whoever makes the call, challenge. In the sky, the mothership.
Because, again, to your point, one of the great traditions of baseball is just the whining that many people do.
With replay, obviously this is not a baseball show, but Tom, you started it. Even with replay, you still have the incidents, and obviously those are human beings looking at the replay, and like, without question, obvious evidence. I'm a soccer fan. I mean, the VAR in soccer is infuriating. I mean, you go and you watch
football.
Oh yeah, football.
Football.
I was at the FIFA Club World Cup Championship game on Sunday.
Oh
yeah,
really?
So I saw the game with me and 81,000 of my closest friends. But it was a lot of fun. But there was, if you do follow soccer and you go to the VAR, it is.
Did you hang with Don and Melania?
They were across the way.
Okay.
Your seats were equally as good.
Almost as good. Truthfully, it's very frustrating. And I think to your point, Johnny, and who do you yell at? I mean, because it doesn't necessarily get it right. I mean, it still is inconsistent. And you'll see, 2 days later, they say, "Yeah, the VAR official got it wrong. Mm-hmm. He should have said he should have done this."
So VAR is virtual referees official.
It's a review system.
It's a system.
It's a camera review system. System for offsides and for fouls and penalties.
So even
in the game, there was the VAR got something right in this game. The one time they used it was the red card. So there was they caught a player pulling another player's hair and then pulling him to the ground, and that's red card.
So let me bring this back to the world of technology and manufacturing.
Thank you.
Optical sorting machines used in potato chip production to identify and remove defects in foreign material, improving product quality and consistency. These machines use cameras and sometimes lasers to analyze potato chips and eject defective items. Modern systems can detect issues like wet centers, doubles, and discoloration, ensuring high quality chips reach each consumer. Yeah. You ever watch a video?
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable how quickly, they're doing that.
God. Yeah. They're just zinging by.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we have members that are using that technology along with some others in there, also in the food industry.
See how I segued right back?
Yeah, no, it's true. And it is amazing.
And potato chips, honestly. You connected all the dots there.
Potato chips. it is. But one of our members, Caribbean Food in down in Rockland County, uses the
beer and potato chips.
Sounds great.
And Jamaican beef patties.
If there's donuts around, I'm all set. They use that technology as well as some X-ray technology to make sure there's no impurities in their product before it goes into the freezer, once it comes out of the oven, and it's it's for food safety. It's tremendous, and I think even our friends up the street in Poughkeepsie at James Taylor are using something similar to identify and maximize board quality and board length.
I was also going to mention that Emma and Kira went to JBT yesterday, one of the things that they do or make machines to do is for processed meats. And so they have technology also along with that to just catch anything, make sure and scan everything, also slice things and slice the meat in just the right way so that you get the right types of portions, you cut out the right types of things, and all of that is done.
Where did I see in the lumber industry, you talked about like with Taylor, where they laser scan,
like the logs, imperfections
the logs before they even cut them.
Before that, okay.
They
like an X-ray type thing, some sort of scan.
And then it maximizes production, minimizes waste.
I mean, if you think in terms of and lumber industry is a great example because some pieces of wood, as you well know, are worth thousands of dollars. Yeah. A tree can be worth $100,000, or it can be worth
nothing.
Just press board stuff, right? So if you can if you can identify that and maximize that and make sure that you're getting the highest quality and maximum use of each log, board, whatever it is really important.
Yeah.
And I think this is a larger issue of what's happening with manufacturing is this productivity improvement is using automation and artificial intelligence, connecting those two things to be more efficient, more productive, and more profitable, and it's we're seeing it on its exponential what's happening out there.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, and the opposite is in terms of waste and sustainability. I mean, there's a lot of pressure to make sure that you're not wasting anything, whether it's metal or wood or potato chips, and having the technology to help you be able to keep up with those things so that you're doing less damage, whether it's to the environment or to your pocket, just in general, how you can make sure that there's less waste and more productivity.
And looking at these notes that I have here on artificial intelligence, AI-powered systems trained to recognize, going back to the potato chips now, wide range of defects, including a specific to kettle-style chips like clumps or oil-soaked chips, optical scanners, crucial for removing foreign objects that might accidentally enter the production line, such as small pieces of plastic, rocks, other debris. So and going back to what you and Robbie both said, or I guess everybody said, merging the benefits of technology to the benefit of people without sidelining people to make it make it more people centered.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think this is where Harold is going to go with that, but I was thinking when you were saying that, there's the demand is still there, right? So it's not as if the order numbers are low. Mm-hmm. So think about the people who are even eating potato chips. They still need to make a drastic amount of potato chips. Yes. They need enough people to operate those machines. They need people to maintain those machines. They need people to, you know, fill it, whatever they start with, wherever that goes. They might be less entry-level people in some ways.
That's a great point.
Less manual labor, but who's running all these machines?
Mechatronics.
Yeah, exactly.
Right down the road.
Exactly.
It's very true.
Exactly.
I was going to say along that those lines of with artificial intelligence, that's, you know, you're talking about things that are, you know, the scanners that are identifying and picking up the data. What's fascinating now is, and what's happening as we speak, is that data is not going to a person to interpret. It's going to a machine it's already being interpreted by the computer into the machine. So if the oil needs to be tweaked higher, the temperature needs to be tweaked higher, it's doing it automatically because it knows that that's what's causing that defect. Or if there is a, you know, that potato was bad, they know that we know which batch of potatoes that was, and they're going back and they're checking to see if that was, you know, a consistent problem. And it is really
this is really interesting topic. Let's get into the sports report from the Zoles right now. Some help our friends at Atlas Star, and then come back to this here on Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon.
Live, local, and unafraid, this is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Hudson Valley Focus Live on this Tuesday morning. Johnny Ann Hansen, Harold King, Council of Industry, councilofindustry.org. So I was thinking about a case study from, this is like more than 40 years ago, and this is actually based on a real situation. It was Ford defects in stamped sheet metal parts in Ford automobiles. And there was a question as to what caused it. Mm. There was union contracts under negotiation at the time. There were a number of factors involved in it, and everybody was pointing the finger at somebody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, did the workers sabotage it? So I mean, this would be a situation where having the, you know, like different scanners and things available way back when would have helped resolve that issue.
Right.
It actually turned out, once people stopped fighting with each other, it was actually a defective batch of steel.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And but in the stamping, you know, it just wouldn't form properly. Yeah. But so you know, and there were a number of different theories that were involved.
Yeah.
So it really pays to go back and like look at some of these situations and say, okay, how can we help resolve it?
And how much time did they spend on that?
Oh yeah,
you know, blaming. Yeah. Somebody who was on our board a couple of years ago had said something once in passing, and it sticks with me: is blame the process, not the person. So, like, even if the person was the problem in that, what was the process that person was either following or wasn't following? And if they weren't following that, why weren't they following it? Right. Was it not clear enough? Did they not understand it? Did they just disagree?
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Exactly. Exactly. Way to tie it back there. That's what I'm saying about the umpires.
So, but that's an important point. And this makes me, again, think back many years ago to somebody who worked for a major company in the area, and the people who were on the line were finding problems with the large rejection rate, low yield, and they were going back to management saying, wait a minute, the process is wrong. They weren't being listened to.
And I think
we don't hear that necessarily from our members, but in society.
And I think, you know, for 25 years we've been teaching a supervisor program. For 20 years we've been, you know, teaching lean manufacturing, and so many companies embrace those things, and that's really what it comes down to. It's like, you know, what is the process? How do we improve the process? You know, Lean and Six Sigma is literally that. It is removing it is blending quality and efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, looking at where the defects are, finding the root cause, and fixing that root cause. And it is very rewarding from where we sit. When we sit in a classroom and, you know, we have terrific instructor, you know, from RIT or from wherever, but most recently from RIT. And when you see light bulbs go off and you know, and actually, and they're literally working on, in our yellow belt and our green belt programs, they're literally working on company problems. They're taking an issue that they have and they've come into the classroom for 3 days or 20 days, however long the training program is, and they're going back and they're saying, ah, like this big aha, you like kind of like literally feel the light bulbs going off over people's heads, and you see the camaraderie as they work together to solve the problem. It's very exciting, using these tools, using these common tools.
But that's also the makes me think in this argument for lifelong learning and going back. I mean, I'll go back to the early 1980s when I went back to Dutchess Community College for small business management.
Yeah.
Our property casualty insurance industry was going through profound changes at that point in time with automation, new channels of marketing, distribution.
Yeah.
The world was changing rapidly.
As it is now.
I went back and took the small business management and marketing, advanced marketing, and had Professor George Friedman, and I said to him, because they have the case studies in the books.
Yeah.
I said, I have my own business. I want to do my term paper based on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Nothing faculty member would like more than that.
Yes, exactly. But what's interesting, I'm reminded of, is you knew Ted Clark.
Yeah, sure.
And Ted and I both had George Friedman as our same marketing professor. He was phenomenal. Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal. That's what Ted and I had discussions about. That Ted went on to be a marketing professor over at the New Paltz School of Business.
Yeah. I think the continuing learning, it feels like it should just be a default for everyone, regardless of your career path or not career path. We're working with the Department of Labor on providing some Coursera content to manufacturing members. And Coursera is just an online learning hub that you can take a class on just about anything from quantum computing, AI prompting, to basic Excel or personal branding or all those things. But we've assigned a couple of them to the team at the council. I've also taken a couple of classes just to see how the experience is going. And it's an interesting reminder because, I mean, I went to Marist and I got my graduate degree, but at the same time, like taking these things, I'm like, a lot's changed, right?
Yeah,
changed in the last however many years. So it's helpful to even, I may have the foundations of a lot of things, but what's happened between 2017 and 2025, that's different. And so having those different approaches, it's critical. So however, you could go on YouTube and watch things, on your own. You don't necessarily need structure for that, but there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah, I would say that for your audience, and the Coursera is an amazing resource, and even paying a full subscription, I think it's $20 for a month and unlimited access.
And what is it now? Tell me.
It's an online learning platform. It's a company. It's private company, and they have everything. Honestly, some from kind of Microsoft Office and how to use social media to C-suite level marketing.
Negotiations. Also, just very specific things that
credentials. Actually, you can come up with your own, but these are credentialing bodies. Colleges are on board, so University of Tennessee
is it Coursera?
Coursera.
Okay, Coursera.org.
Yeah. And you can go on there and take a class that's like an IBM credential that they've uploaded or allowed to be on there. The University of Michigan has courses up there.
And here they have, when you go there now, University of Colorado Boulder, Master of Science in Data Science.
You could go any of those ways. I mean, we're mostly looking at some non-credit things or some micro-credentials, as they're calling them now. And if a person takes it, you can get like a digital badge and put it on your LinkedIn or on your resume to just say that you're doing that. A lot of even my son is home for summer and working on just like, what Excel credential can I get so that it looks like I did something forward. But those types of things. So I mean, it's interesting because I think maybe more content and more opportunities are at your fingertips than ever.
Right.
And sometimes people are stuck with that. Like they're paralyzed because there's too many choices.
It's almost time to go out to the 7:30 break. When we come back, I want to make sure I tell you about my conversation with Dr. Jonah Schenker the other day.
Oh, good.
Oh, wonderful. We just interviewed him for the podcast.
And we have
you know, different collaborations that we are working on.
Oh, that's great.
This is what Harold, you and I have said. This is the matching game.
What a terrific ecosystem we have here, and the more dots we can connect,
so we'll make sure
make it even better.
We'll come back to that. This is Hudson Valley Focus Live. Harold King, Johnny Ann Hansen, councilofindustry.org with Tom Sipas on The Beacon. Back in a minute.
He's the voice of the valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
Hudson Valley Focus on The Beacon, 7:33 on this Tuesday morning. Harold King, Johnny Ann Hansen in studio with me. So last Friday, I had a very nice conversation on the phone with Dr. Jonah Shanker. Now it's the superintendent of the Ulster BOCES, and of course in the BOCES education world, that district superintendent has oversight of the other public schools and reports directly to the education commissioner here in New York. So we're working on Dr. Shanker joining me in the studio sometime in the next few days. We didn't get that worked out yet. I may set it up if, depending on his schedule, Jack Nugent from Maritime Industrial Base is going to be in with me on July 25th. So I'm working with Dr. Shanker's secretary to see whether or not we can make that work. They know each other. This is one of the collaborations that's happening. Jonah and I also talked about the fact that we didn't set it whether it would be in the school year or when, but actually doing a broadcast from the Ulster
BOCES.
Oh,
that'd be great. Once they get the school open, that'd be great.
So, they're working on the new facility at iPark, right?
97.
And so I want to get this out there because there's
synergies everywhere.
There really are.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very proud of the work we've done with the Hudson Valley Pathways Academy. And I think what's really exciting to see, and it was whispered when we were first doing it, like, you could roll this out. This doesn't have to be just here at this PTEC. This could go further. And you start seeing some of those principals from that Pathways Academy and the PTEC school filtering their way under Jonah's leadership into the CTE program. In general, and it's really exciting to see industry connected, so much more integrated into the school, which is leading to better placements, better recruiting. Everything's kind of fallen in place.
So one of the things that we talked about the other day, and this is where listeners now, regardless of your age, I would ask you, as they would say in the military, listen up. Listen up, and I'm serious about this because we still have a misguided perception on the part of some parents and maybe some grandparents and some aunts and uncles about what a BOCES education can be.
I mean the misperception continues. It's definitely changing. You've been here now 8 years.
Yes, I have been here 8 years.
And you have to have.
I've seen a thing or two.
You have to feel.
Yeah, I definitely feel that there's a shift. I think, to your point, that maybe those parents and grandparents who instilled the perception, there's now parents and grandparents who are trying to address that as well and put a little bit of pressure on districts and on programs to make sure that they're offering things to meet all students for all their needs, regardless, including what we would consider traditionally to be like a BOCES pathway. I was going to say, we talk a lot about the Ulster PTEC, but they have the PTEC program in Newburgh also, and theirs is an IT focus, right? And they're partnered with
cybersecurity.
And I was on yesterday talking to an IT company, and I was just like, I'm just curious, like, where are you sourcing your talent? And he was like, we're getting almost everybody out of that PTEC program, and the one in Newburgh. And he's just like, they're perfect, they're local, they're excited to go to work, they're credentialed, they come in, they don't know everything about everything, but they're willing to learn on the job. And so you forget that there are programs like this. I mean, we certainly know that this is like a flagship, but there's other programs with other industry sector focuses and partners. So that was, I thought, nice to hear on that sideline.
And I don't know if Jonah shared, but the number of kids in that in the CTA program is, and Ulster BOCES is, I think, up 40% in a few years. And then in Dutchess BOCES, Tom, it's skyrocketing.
Yeah.
They almost, you know, they're looking, I know they just built a new building,
yes.
but they're looking to rearrange some of the space there because they have so many folks coming in. It's really exciting.
Yeah, but there's so many changes at Dutchess BOCES. I still have not gotten over there since they, you know, the addition and all these changes.
Yeah, and they're doing great work too and being very responsive.
That have a waiting list that they can't keep up with the demand for that right now, and they're trying to figure out how to, you know, shape out something so that they can catch those students who have an interest but weren't able to get into that program. Yeah.
I had to go off the advisory board at the Dutchess BOCES. I mean, their meetings, you know, started generally 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And by the time I would ever get there, it'd be, you know, quarter to 10, and I missed everything and just disrupting the meeting more than
somebody else be engaged. I appreciate
exactly.
that.
I was trying to find the picture of our first manufacturing panel discussion that we had back in 2014, because Dr. Schenker and I were talking about that. I mean, the Pathways was a brand new
a concept. I don't think it was actually a school at that point.
It is nice to see them using those model components and bringing that into other parts of the school. It makes sense. It works. Plus, they're talking about the portrait of a graduate and you know, how to revision what this looks like and how to get students credits for the types of activities like project management or interacting with employers, presentations, research, all those things that go with it.
Yeah. I mean, and I, from the industry perspective, it's infectious. It is, you know, you get a company and, you know, some engineers and some marketing people, some HR people engage with these kids, and the kids are enthusiastic and they're and appreciative, and so that like feeds into their desire to do more, and it's really just great to see, you know, so many of our members really being engaged and finding fulfillment from that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like almost a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, it's building upon itself. It's doing really well.
You and I have spoken many times, Harold, about, you know, one foot in front of the other, but then stop and look back. And when I look at this with the pathways, you know, and where what has been accomplished, the apprenticeship programs, what's been accomplished really in a relatively short time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think what's exciting too, Tom. Yeah, lots has been accomplished, and you do need to. I've actually have counseled my comrade here that
Once
in a while, when you're very frustrated, to look, take a minute, and think of the successes and think back on it. One of those is actually a small program that the Department of Labor implemented a few years ago that we're going to be participating in today, and Johnny Ann's going to participate in next week, is the Teacher Ambassador Program, which we know is a great idea to get teachers into facilities and to learn about modern careers and all kinds of places. So the New York State Department of Labor started a Teacher Ambassador Program 3 years ago, where they actually hire teachers for the summer, pay them to come into this program and to develop curriculum that they bring back to their schools and to their departments and grade levels for career pathways. And part of that is factory tours and visiting medical centers and understanding what the careers are, because I think it's safe to say that, you know, not all teachers have been exposed to all careers. None of us have been exposed to all careers. So they get a chance to learn. So today I think there's seven of them, and we're going to be at Howmet up in Kingston. We're going to get a tour, going to hear from Eileen LaRocca and Allison Stirrup a little bit about what they do there, and learn about the aerospace industry and some of the tools that they make to support that, and hopefully they'll have a better understanding.
Yeah, and this is happening throughout the state.
And
next week I'm doing a presentation on advanced manufacturing on a panel on Zoom, and I think there's over like a I'm going to say 50, 67, maybe even like 100 people in this, like all across the state.
Right.
And then they break out into little geographical areas, so that in our case, you're going to meet with 8 people that go to Kingston, but someone's doing that same thing.
Right, in Long Island and North
Niagara.
Country and Western. Yeah. Western.
Which is nice. It's just to show them that, you know, non-traditional career paths, and just get a little bit more exposure.
Yeah, and the teachers are, across the spectrum, high school, elementary school, guidance counselors, a broad mix.
I mean, this is something that we've had these conversations. I've had these conversations. It was 35 years ago this summer that I started on that Poughkeepsie Area Chamber of Commerce Education Committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this was something that I was advocating for back then, and really being active about the need for the trades industrial arts programs and for the whether it be teachers, guidance counselors, to get out and learn more about who and what's why I urge people to look at your Council of Industry website. Yeah.
And I think what's important here too, Johnny, and I talk about this all the time, is it's not just what's happening now. It kind of goes to our conversation earlier, like what's next?
Yeah.
Yes. So they can hear from these industry professionals not just what their needs are in this moment, which are certainly many, but like what are the skills of the future? what should you be instilling in your kids? What should you should be showing them? And a lot of it, is problem solving and creative thinking and lifelong learning and commitment to learning and that.
I think Jonah probably mentioned this while he was on the air with you, but I thought his points of the types of skills you're learning in these programs and the types of graduate you're creating is exactly the same skills you need if you're going to go to a four-year school, if you're going to go directly to the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter really when you break it all down. What's good for you and going into a trade is also good for you in all those other pieces. So, we all know we learn best hands-on and through experiences, and that's how we learn and retain it. And yet, traditionally, you kind of approach it the exact opposite way to get students to learn things. So the more of these activities, the better.
And the more tools they have, students have to
figure it out.
It's good. I mean, Bill Daggett, saying, why are you fighting the phone?
Yeah.
Why are you fighting the search engine? Because let's be honest, that's what you do.
Yeah.
First thing you say to a new employee, try and figure it out.
Yeah.
Look it up. What does ChatGPT say? Before you give up or come to me, give it a try.
Yeah.
So you just, when you talked about the tools, that reminded me of, Hadi Salavidabar, dean of the School of Business, and that was the thing I left him with, and that's why he told me. He said I have always you told me this is about more tools in the toolbox, and you never know when you're going to need them.
Yeah, and I appreciate all the challenges education has now with artificial intelligence, because it is obviously it's a fine line between a tool and cheating.
Disruptive.
It's really a challenge. But
I'm paying attention to you, but I cannot find that picture.
That's
from 2014.
That's a good sign. Look how long ago it was.
And the fact that...
I thought you had recently reposted it, too.
I thought so, too. And I just don't know why I...
Yeah. I feel like ChatGPT could find it for you.
Probably.
I'm just kidding.
Probably.
I'm not sure. But, speaking
so
of
So how
that,
about hold
yeah,
that
go
thought
ahead. Go ahead.
At 7:46 on Hudson Valley Focus Live on The Beacon. Harold King, Johnny Ann Hansen. Quick break with the Zoles. With some help with our friends at Atlas Star Copiers. And then back on The Beacon.
Wake up informed. It's Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
7:50 on Hudson Valley Focus. Thanks to our friends at Atlas Star Copiers for sponsoring those quarter hour sports reports. Harold King, Johnny Ann Hansen in studio. Tariffs?
Yeah. Still out there. Still trying to figure it out. Extended deadline for most in the few weeks. Hopefully deals will be struck and more palatable rates will come into play. But the uncertainty is just very frustrating for everyone involved. And I think almost now the uncertainty is becoming the certainty, and people are just kind of adjusting to not knowing and treading water, and which is not good for anybody.
What I commented on, I think, starting out this morning, which I find very distressing, is people within our own federal government who are undercutting the actions of the president and drawing this out longer instead of speaking with one voice. Mm. There is no question at all that from a national security standpoint, economic security standpoint, environmental regulation standpoint, that we have to get these deals cut with these other countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, listen, I'm Johnny Ann has heard me say this. Robbie can appreciate it, too. The other team is trying to win as well. So, like, these negotiations are two-way streets, and, you know, we may want something that they aren't willing to give. And or in some cases—
other countries or within our own political parties?
In other countries. And exactly. I mean, within our— we know that with our own political
parties. But that's my point, though. Yeah. That's my point, is that what the hell is wrong with people here to people who've been in Congress for a long time who signed on to some of these original trade deals without putting labor protections in, without putting environmental protections, child labor laws.
I think, you know, in some cases it's almost the opposite. You know, we're working with, I mean, in the European Union, for example, they have many non-financial restraints on trade, right?
Yes.
They've got rules about non-GMO, and they have rules about EV standards and things that are feel like barriers, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that the president's talked about those. But that's not something that they can just negotiate, right? That those are laws that they need to change. It's mm-hmm. not something they all they can do is say, we will try to change the law. So it becomes this drawn-out process, and it's very limiting.
I've actually looked a lot at Europe and the fact that I've come to the conclusion that many of the really old manufacturing firms in Europe, the cartels that exist in Europe, are actually punishing their own citizens by holding things artificially high, restricting competition. You know, the old guard does not want to open up to competition.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I don't think the real challenge with Europe in the negotiation is manufacturing to manufacturing. I mean, I think there's some problems with steel and so forth. I do think it's the non-manufacturing world. I think it's the agriculture in particular. You know, the farmers have a lot of protections up and down the board there. You know, there are other standards as well. And I think those are the barriers that I think are probably complicating the negotiations. I don't know. I mean,
there are.
Literally, I'm just a guy reading the newspaper. So I don't know any more than anybody else.
But they've got some very serious problems in Europe with respect to agriculture.
Yeah, that's the same with Japan. I mean, if we want to import rice, it's not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, it might happen, but it's not going to happen overnight.
But in Europe, a lot, especially in France, I know from the conversations I had with Socrates Gazolius over the years, when you look at a lot of the taxes on fuels that these farmers are buried under.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Remember the yellow vest?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Driving the tractors to the city.
It was
ridiculous. How they were impacting the cost of food for the ordinary citizen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and the food's good, but it is. it is making things more expensive for sure. And I mean, the fact that it's difficult to import, quality, inexpensive American goods there mm-hmm. is also a challenge. So I think those things are very frustrating in our end, and in large part because it is kind of non-manufacturing related. We're in the manufacturing, it kind of gets a lot of the news attention, but I think the problem that's holding up a lot of the deals is not related to products per se, our manufactured goods, as much as it is maybe agricultural goods.
And I feel very strongly that the administration has failed to communicate to the American public what so much of this is all about.
Yeah.
There's so many different agendas, which is what you've said in a very different way.
Yeah, I think if you could wave a magic wand and make it be perfect, you know, we wouldn't, in my opinion, this is Harold King, not the Council of Industry, it's not Johnny Yan, it's anybody. But we wouldn't have picked a fight with Canada and Mexico first. With fentanyl is a big problem, but it wouldn't be the first problem that we address. We would try to be isolating China, which is a problem. I mean, the way they do business, their economic model undercuts American manufacturing and the American economy. There's no doubt about that in my mind. And we would have worked on that first. We would have articulated that. We've gotten allies on board, and then we would have moved on from there years from now. That's my opinion, but we didn't do that. So now we've got like the whole world all at once and lots of moving parts. And I think the president loves that, and I think he's good at it, and we'll see where it all lands. But right now it's a lot of like just watching there's a marble under the shells, and we're watching the shells go around and around and around trying to figure out where the marble is. And there's lots of moving parts.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to, you know, think through what you said about the, you know, having done this sequentially as opposed to taking it all on in parallel. Yeah. I'm gonna ponder on that one.
You'd like to think that that would get more people on board, that would get more support. But then, if you wanted to play it the other way, realistically, were you ever going to get people on board? Were they? Was it ever going to be that simple? Did you need to break a few things? And was there a percentage of breakage that didn't need to be this?
Well said.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Hindsight is 20/20 for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we had that in the foresight. I think. We're not really at the table.
And that's not. I mean, that's not a unique opinion that I have. I think there's a lot of folks that feel the same way about that. I think particularly in our world, who compete with China or have had their intellectual property stolen by China or all of that work. The truth is we're still extremely intertwined with them. So it's not just a matter of just deciding to to decouple.
And on the other side of that is that a lot of these employers or manufacturers have made good relationships in other countries and have had a successful globalization for years, that they adapted their business to be able to get what they needed from Europe and what they needed from Canada and what they needed from Mexico to be able to make the best products. And then, that kind of gets out with the bathwater.
Right. You know? Exactly.
So it does make it a little bit difficult. Yeah. And I think we hear it. We know that the majority of manufacturing employers in our region know that something needed to change, that we needed to bring things back, that we needed to get a handle on it. I don't know that anyone really agrees that this was the way to do it. I'm curious to see what the history books say.
Mm. Yeah, right. We're going to get 10, 20 years behind us and we'll see.
Yeah.
Gosh, I got to make sure I stick around that long.
It's a powerful motivation for you, Tom. Powerful motivation.
That's funny,
motivation.
Tom, because I'm busy thinking, how do I get out of this whole thing?
I can see Tom. I'm not feeling well. I'm just kidding. I really got to find out.
Yeah. I got to hear what the news is.
When I went to the dentist last year and he put a crown in, I said, you got to make this thing last until at least 90.
Yeah, right. Once done here.
So I want to see how these things shake out. Well, Harold and Johnny Ann, thanks for being here. Yeah. And you gave me a lot to think about. Listeners, after this break, when I come back, White House unveils sweeping MAHA changes in nation's food supply chain. Mm-hmm. Back in a minute on The Beacon.